The tank is full, and we're moving through the Arizona Hour with Sanderson Ford and Rosie on the house.
In 1877, a Scotsman by the name of David Gowan, G-O-W-A-N. I don't have a Scottish accent. How do you think
Gowan.
That rolls?
I'll go with Gowan. Gowan.
Mm-hmm. Moving through the mountains of central Arizona when Apache warriors picked up his trail. He fled deeper into the wilderness as they chased him. He came into a magnificent green valley with streams running through it, looking for a place to hide. In the distance, he saw a towering stone archway next to a cave. He crawled in there for 3 days until he was convinced that his pursuers were gone. Now, this is a testament to what a landscape can do to you. When he came out of the cave, what do you think he did? You've just hid for 3 days from Apache warriors. You're all alone.
I'd get something to eat.
Well, you get something to eat. What would you maybe get out of there?
Yeah. What? Get out of the cave? Yeah.
Like out of the area. He was so taken back by the landscape, he stuck a claim out for the land.
Oh, wow. He didn't need a real estate agent. He just went, hey, I'll buy this.
This isn't bad. I think I'll stay here.
It is pretty.
He invited his nephew out, David Goodfellow, years later, who built the lodge in 1972. The lodge and the fruit trees that he planted still stand today. And we've got a special guest on the line to talk to us more about Payson, Miss Donna Daly, as we cover it as our featured staycation destination for the month of July here at Rosie on the House. Good morning, Donna.
Good morning.
You've got some great stories about the town of Payson, and I love the dew stories. They're hilarious.
Well, this is one of the colorful eras of Payson, the time of Prohibition, when we had an unexpected economic boon from Prohibition. It was supposed to stop the consumption of alcohol, and instead, people made money from it. And this all started with the 18th Amendment went into effect in 1920, but it started here 5 years earlier. Back in 1914, Arizona voted to ban the production, consumption, and transportation of alcohol. And that went into effect on January 1st, 1915. Now, it got challenged in a federal court, but the panel refused to put that law on hold. So we became the 13th state to go dry.
And Payson was a great opportunity to not acknowledge that law.
Well, you know, we're kind of isolated up here.
Especially in the 1920s, there was no paved roads into it.
Right. So, I mean, it took a while for that to kind of sink in. But when it did, the effect was the local bars, which were the real social center for the miners, the ranchers, the loggers. It's where they would meet and socialize and have a little bit to drink. And the drinking part was cut out. They still could go to places like the 16-to-1 Saloon, the Dive, August Pieper Saloon, but those saloons could only remain open for pool and card games, gambling, dancing, and the occasional fight. That thirst for alcohol, though, didn't really disappear. So alcohol production went underground, and that was when the bootleggers came into the picture. And they found that there was a big demand for whiskey, and the production was a very profitable venture.
Arizona Highway Magazine reported that there were anywhere from 30 to 40 stills operating in the Payson area at that time. And what was the primary name of their product?
Well, up here it was called Payson Dew. Now, if you read a lot of Zane Grey novels, because Zane Grey spent some time up here. In 1921, his cabin was finished, and during the years from 1921 to 1929, he was a regular fixture writing his novels up here, and he wrote about this era, but his name for it was White Mule. Same thing.
Yeah, I got to thinking, if George Jones recorded the song differently, it'd be... white mule?
White mule. And in the whiskey still, you know, you've got an aging process, but they did not have to do that for the Payson Dew.
Well, you know, there was a lot of local color up here at the time, and everyone was involved. There were so many stills. Prior to Prohibition, you would have an occasional still. If a rancher had a canyon with a good water source, it wasn't unusual to have a personal still there. But pretty soon they were popping up everywhere, and people liked to brag about how good their product was. And Vernon Hawk, one of the locals, said that, boy, you could age that. You could age Payson Dew 3 years and 30 days. And he said the reason was that at 5 to 6 feet, you could find water that was as pure as rainwater, free from minerals, no impurities, and it just lent itself to a really good brew. And it was not unusual to find sales going on right on Main Street, even though it was still illegal. Pete Hawk sewed 20 pockets inside his World War I overcoat, and each pocket contained, excuse me, I lost my voice for a minute, it had a half pint of moonshine in there. So even on the hottest day of August, there's Pete wearing the World War I jacket, and if you smiled nicely, you could get your thirst quenched.
And to put that in perspective, so he's got 20 pockets, and each pocket holds a pint or a half pint?
Half pint.
Okay, so that's a half a pound. So he's walking around with 10 pounds of moonshine in the middle of the summer. Now, I know you're at 1,000 feet, at a mile elevation in Payson.
Yeah, we are. We're at 5,000 feet.
In August, that's still pretty warm and that close to the sun.
It could have been worth it.
Yeah, I got to thinking the glass bottles he had the whiskey in. That added, because they weren't thin like they are today. I mean,
that's
those
true.
Were very thick.
The glass bottles would have even added more weight to that.
So add that weight.
Now,
actually, they used any kind of bottles they could get because they would just pay people. They would pay the kids to bring glass bottles. And we have a whole collection in the Rim Country Museum of bottles that were donated by local citizens that are authentic moonshine bottles. And they're all different shapes and sizes. But jelly jars were very popular. And one of the locals always had a statement that, you know, you could always tell who'd been drinking because they'd have that red line across the bridge of their nose from those jelly jars.
Wow.
Now, as this bootlegging industry grows, it brings in the authorities. And there's some pretty interesting stories about how they handled that.
Yes, it was illegal. In spite of the fact that everyone tried to hide it, the government did know that bootlegging was going on up here. And the revenue agents, which the locals called prohees, they would come up, they would search for the stills, and if you were caught attending one of those stills, you would be arrested. One of the main revenue agents was a fellow named Vernon Lamore, and he made frequent trips up here because he had some local ties to the area. He went to school with a lot of these people. And prior to a trip coming up to Payson, Vernon had this habit of calling May Hawk to announce that he was coming up to do a little fishing. And that kind of tipped the word that there was an impending visit by the revenue agents, and word would spread. Now, Star Valley is kind of like a suburb of Payson. It's not far away, a little bit more rural, lots of mules. So they would hang bells on leather belts around the necks of the mules and shoo them into the forest, and that was the warning system to anyone that was tending the stills. And then sometimes there would be the phone call. It wasn't exactly a call. It was a distinctive ring on the phone line that would alert people that, okay, the prohis are leaving Globe and they're headed for your area.
That would signal them to go get the mules going. It's a little different than Paul Revere and the British are coming.
Yeah, he just had one way of doing it. He held up a lantern, one or two, and that was it, you know?
Well, but we did have a raid. We had one significant raid on Main Street, and that was a building that right now it houses the Humane Society thrift store. But before that, way before that, It belonged to a guy named Frenchie Choquette, and he was producing and selling Pace and Due right out of the building. And Vernon found out. So he came up with reinforcements, guns drawn, and he kicked in the front door of the building that he thought Frenchie was producing Pace and Due in. And much to his surprise, he interrupted a lady's luncheon. They were cleaning up the dishes because Frenchie had decided to get out of the moonshine business, and he sold that building to the Woman's Club. And they were just cleaning up after a luncheon, and they were not happy with Vernon and the agents.
Day late and a dollar short on the raid.
Right. Well, the building is still owned by the Woman's Club, and they just rent part of it out to the Humane Society. But it is a historical feature on Main Street, and right out in front is our chaining tree. And this was on the Centennial website when we were celebrating Arizona's Centennial. We didn't have a jail. So if you were caught doing something you shouldn't be doing, you got chained to the tree.
I didn't know Payson had a chaining tree, too. We have one in Wickenburg, but I didn't know Payson had one, too.
Well, yeah, we had it submitted to the website for the Centennial, and you stayed chained there until somebody from a town that actually had a jail came and picked you up.
Now, talk to us about the Rim Country Museum.
Okay. The Rim Country Museum and the Zane Grey Cabin, which is a replica of the actual Zane Grey Cabin, that one burned in 1990 with the Dude Fire. So a replica was built on our property in 2005. So we operate the Historical Society, the Northern Gila County Historical Society, operates the Zane Grey Cabin and the Rim Country Museum, which is a two-story building that tells the history of the area, starting with the prehistoric people, going through the Apache times, ranching, mining, just a little bit of everything.
What are the hours and operation times of the museum?
We're open Wednesday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. We're an all-volunteer organization. I am the exhibits chair. That's why I'm talking to you this morning, because if you're going to do the exhibits, you kind of have to really learn a little bit of that, the history. And we try to share the history and collect the artifacts and...
What's your favorite exhibit on display right now?
Oh, gosh, there's so many. And we are doing a renovation now that's very exciting. Probably one of my favorites is the first one I worked on, which was the Tonto Apache exhibit. And it was a thrill to work on it. We've had some really good contacts with the Tonto Apache tribe, and they've helped us quite a bit. But some of the new changes... We get requests from people who come through and say, you know, what do you mean I have to have a guide? You know, can't I just go through on my own? Well, our insurance doesn't permit that right now because we have things like giant saws, and we don't want anyone getting hurt. So we are in the process of retrofitting the museum to permit a choice. You can either have the docent guide you through, or you can go through on your own. So we're adding some extra signage. We're developing a mini theater. It's going to be quite exciting, but we're under a little construction off and on right now.
Donna Dahlia, Rim Country Museum Exhibit Chair, thanks for spending time this morning shedding a little light on the Payson Due and stories and events around Payson, Arizona, our featured destination for Arizona staycation.